hello and welcome to the Advisor Pact monthly session. I'm Mark Little, and this is going to be great. We've received a few questions this month. Normally, just so you know the process, as you're going through the monthly projects that we send to you, you're going to have questions. And what we attempt to do is to respond to your questions in real time. So most of the people in this program, most of the financial advisors in this program who submit, you know, questions as you get stuck or you had need direction or you encounter some issue you've never dealt with, then, you know, the standard procedure is just submit your question as you have, as it occurs to you, and then we'll respond to you in real time. But each month, I collect what I feel are some of the most relevant questions, a few that I think would be helpful for everybody to see. So we share the information, and that's what we're going to do today. I just want to, as always, bring us back to dead center. Like, what's the purpose of this program? What makes this program different is that you're attempting to increase your client referrals by providing four things that clients swear they can't find anywhere at any price from any financial advisor. We call these the four client expectations. These are four things that clients consistently, it shows in every research study I've ever seen on it, including the research we've done since 2002, that these are the four things that clients claim they want the most, that they're willing to pay the most for, and can't seem to find anywhere. So the whole point of this program is that you're going to make a pledge to each and every client. Not every client. If you're taking non-ideal clients because you're in survival mode, totally understand that. Been there myself. We're not talking about non-ideal clients. We're talking only about those clients that you define somehow as ideal clients. These are your best clients. And you're going to make a pledge to them. We call this your advisor pact. You're going to make your advisor pact pledge to every ideal client. And in short, that's your pledge. You're going to be the only financial professional in their life to look them in the eye and promise four things. Number one, I'm going to protect you. I've got your back. I'm going to pledge not to have any conflicts of interest. So you don't have to worry that I'm recommending something because maybe I'm earning a higher commission on a financial product or service than I am on other things that I could recommend to you. I'm going to protect you with no conflicts of interest. I've got your back. Second is attention. I'm going to pay attention. And by our definition, paying attention means I'm going to know whether you're on or off track at all times. And if, as always occurs, at some point you just drift off track for whatever reason, then I'm going to notice this. I'm going to pay attention, and I'm going to know that you've drifted off track, and I'm going to meet with you several times a year. We recommend the three-meeting process. So you're meeting with clients every 4 months. So in that context, if that's what you've implemented, which is what we recommend, you're paying attention so that at least once every 4 months, you're confirming that the client is still on track. Or if at one of the client progress meetings every 4 months, you'd notice that a client's drifted off track, you pledge to the client that you will make sure that in that same meeting, you're going to provide all the required recommendations that are necessary to get them back on track. So you're paying attention. And then coordination. Every client before you come along has financial people in their life. They've got typically an accountant. They've got bankers. They've usually got their money parked somewhere, money managers, whatever. Certainly have insurance agents for their home and their car and all of that. Problem is, nobody's coordinating any of these people. So you're stepping up in their life and saying, I'm going to be the one that I'm going to coordinate all the financial people. I'm going to coordinate all the financial products and services in your life. I'm going to make sure that all these people in your life that are providing recommendations, you know, since they've never seen an overarching strategy, they're just giving recommendations based on their experience and skill. I'm going to come in, I'm going to coordinate these people. I'm going to make sure that you've got a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. In other words, an overarching plan that's focused on accomplishing your objectives. And I'm going to make sure that every financial person on your team and every financial product and service is perfectly aligned with that overarching strategy. So I pledge to coordinate everything. And transparency. Clients often complain that they don't know what they're paying their financial people. It's hidden somehow. They're hidden fees. In our research, I can't tell you how many affluent people, we're talking about successful, affluent people, so they know better. But I can't tell you how many of these people have said in the when questioned, you know, how much are you paying your financial advisor? And they say something along the lines of, I don't think I'm paying them anything. But yet they know upon further questioning, they know that there's no free lunch. The problem is there's not enough transparency in our industry. And the more successful and the more affluent the client, the more this is an issue that they don't understand how they're paying the people that are serving them, and that's troubling to them. So you're going to come in with an entire package. You're going to make this advisor pact. Pact is obviously an acronym. You're going to make this pledge to each and every ideal client, and you're going to provide four things that no other advisor in your community is offering. I mean, I will wager you that unless they're working with us, I'll bet that you cannot identify any other financial advisor, any other financial firm in your community that's actually providing and delivering on each of these four things. So this puts you in a category of one. Once you perfect the advisor pact and you're actually delivering on all four of these things, then you'll be the only game in town. And until then, as you're putting together pieces and parts and as you're incrementally implementing your advisor pact pledge, you know, you can't just snap a finger and deliver on all four of these things overnight. No, you're implementing. That's why you're in this program. You're doing one piece at a time. You're putting it together as quickly as you're capable. Well, all I'm saying is that your clients will sit up and take notice. Each individual piece and part that you perfect of this pledge, and even if you can't make the entire promise immediately, as you implement pieces of improvement in your business, parts of this pact, then your clients will notice, your clients will you know, be impressed. And that's what it's all about. It's about exceeding the expectations of your clients. Okay, on to the questions. You know, last month, April's call, we had lots of responses about this question during the monthly session, which is this session. And the question was, here, let me just put the question up again. I understand that this is not a client acquisition focus, meaning this program. However, I found you through Bill Bachrach's program, and Bill highlighted how Mark acquired his clients by literally talking to hundreds of prospective clients. If possible, can Mark spend a moment in a future call to address how he was so successful? How did he find so many people who were willing to talk to him and deliver the roadmap discussion? So not everybody in this program is familiar with Bill Bachrach. Not everybody in this program knows what we're talking about when we say the roadmap discussion. Let me just say that there's three aspects to client acquisition. Well, let me say it a different way. There's three areas of your business that every financial advisor has to master if you're going to be successful. Number one is lead generation. And that's just simply mastering the idea that you know where your potential clients are, you know where to go find them, and you know what to say when you meet them. Okay? So that's lead generation. The second is lead conversion. So once you've met a potential client and you've started a little conversation with them, then lead conversion is that process by which you decide to actually sit down formally and discuss business, and you convert a potential ideal client into an actual paying client. So that's lead conversion. It's this whole process of being able, once you've identified a lead who's actually a spectacular lead, you know, it's that, it's having an effective process of converting a lead into a paying client. And then the third thing you have to master is client service. So that's, and that's what this program is all about. We don't deal with lead generation. We don't deal with lead conversion. This entire program assumes that you've got clients and that the question on the table is, how do I exceed these clients' expectations? How do I make it so for sure they never fire us, and 100% we're focused on impressing them? Like, not just meeting their expectations, but exceeding their expectations. So you're right that this, when it says, I understand this is not a client acquisition focus, what they're meaning to say is, I understand the Advisor Pact program is not about lead generation or lead conversion. It's 100% about client service. That being said, as I mentioned last month, it's crazy. The number one question that we get in this program, believe it or not, is, Mark, how did you ever acquire 1,242 clients to begin with? As in, Mark, I know it's a bad idea. I know it's you know, something you recommend against, having that many clients where you can't even meet with them annually and you're not serving them at a high level. But it's just a point of curiosity. Like, Mark, how did you acquire all those clients? As in, maybe something you were doing, which obviously was working, maybe elements of what you were doing would work for me. So last month, I went through my client acquisition process. So there was a couple of pieces and parts of this that there were a ton of follow-up questions. So I'm going to go through it again just to make it clear. So the way I described it last month is, number one, I implemented what I call the Marketing 101 project. All right. So that's what I'm going to go into a little bit more in detail. But in essence, what I did was I realized that clients are not in my office. If I'm going to find and add clients, I'm not going to do it sitting at my desk staring at my computer. So I realized I've got to get out of the office. I've got to go meet people. I've got to get out of here, which is what I did. I know it sounds simple and basic, but that was a big thing for me. I worked at a Wall Street-based firm, and we were actually encouraged to sit at our desk and just cold call, like call people all day long. And most of the financial advisors in our office did just that. You know, they picked up the phone early in the morning and they were cold calling until late at night. It's crazy. I hated that and I refused to do it. So my solution was something called the Marketing 101 Make-A-List project, and it was in, and basically I got out of the office three out of the 5 days a week. And I did not have a process that was involved any sales techniques, no sales methodology, no sales techniques, no sales closing tactics, nothing like that. I just met people. I made it my job to get in front of a lot of people. Now, I can tell you there is an art to this that I call fishing in the right ponds. So yes, you can get out there and start meeting a lot of people. But if, as I discovered, you're not meeting enough of the quote-unquote right people, in other words, you're not meeting enough people that meet your ideal client profile, yes, then you have to start changing it up and maybe fishing in different ponds, like going to different groups or identifying different places to be. I mean, my coach and mentor, Bill Bachrach, since 1999, he talks very eloquently about this. He says, you know, these affluent people in your community, these potential ideal clients, they're doing something in your community. They're hanging out together. They're doing something together in your community. It could be It could be a charitable banquet that's occurring sometime in the next 6 months in your city, or it could be some organization or committee or something or another, something that they're doing where, you know, people that meet your ideal client profile have already decided to gather together with each other. It's your job to figure out where those places are and figure out what's not a contrived venue for you, and that, which is exactly what I did. I knew I had to fish in the right pond, so I figured out where all the people that met my ideal client profile were already gathering. But then after I made that list, I decided, you know, some of these things are just not of any interest to me. Like, for example, I wasn't that interested in politics, so I knew a lot of people in my community that met my ideal client profile were fundraising for political candidates. And I put my toe in the water of that, and I did not like that. But along the same lines, I did realize that what I really cared about were issues in the community rather than politicians themselves. Like, for example, I was concerned that the school district in my community wasn't growing quickly enough and not building enough schools and not building enough of the right types of schools. Like, they didn't have enough computers and high tech and stuff like that. So what did I do? I got involved with that issue and ultimately chaired the biggest bond election in my city at that point. And it was successful. And it basically was, you know, let's build some high-tech schools in our school district, and let's put tons of high technology in those schools so the kids, you know, have access to all that. Anyway, I put my money where my mouth was. I knew that that would attract a lot of, I knew that it was not only an issue that I cared about, but that there would be a lot of potential ideal clients that would be attracted like magnets to that sort of an issue. So, and I was right. Anyway, fish in the right ponds. I did not have any sales tactics. I just went out to build my reputation in the community. I was just being a nice person, adding value in every venue that I came across. And oh, by the way, there is a cliche out there, which is, forgive me if I use cliches, but I love cliches, because what is a cliche at the end of the day, which is a cliche? At the end of the day, a cliche is accurate because it becomes a cliche because there's truth to it. And there is a cliche that clients do business with people that they know, like, and trust. Know, like, and trust. Well, when you're out there fishing in the right ponds, you can't be a jerk. You can't be a taker. You have to be a giver, not a taker. You have to be someone who adds value in every setting that you find yourself in. That's how I realized I would build my reputation. It was just being a nice person, adding value in every committee and every charitable board that I served on, and being that person that they could know, like, and trust. So that's not the person that stirs up trouble on the board and is constantly arguing. And, you know, so I added value, and I was that person that you could know, like, and trust. So, and when I met new people, whether I was serving on a committee or serving on a board or whatever, whenever I met somebody, not focused on business, forget business. That's the key to this process, or my process at least, is forget business. Just be a nice person. So whenever I met somebody new or I was introduced to somebody new, I met with them at least twice. In other words, I didn't just go up to three people at a committee meeting and introduce myself. No, I took down their name. I got their business cards. I'd follow up. So that was one interaction. And then I would call them up later and say, hey, you've served on this committee or you've served on this board for a long time. I'm sort of new to this. Could I take you out to coffee at Starbucks or somehow, you know, let's go grab breakfast. And maybe you could spend, you know, just 20 minutes and tell me what you think's really going on this committee, or how can I add value, or what's this whole project all about? Or you know, give me the benefit of your experience in serving on this board. You know, I'd love to hear why you're involved and what you've been doing. Anyway, I would take the time to meet with every new person at least twice. So I just met tons of people. It sounds crazy. This is all I did. And I never talked about my business unless they asked me. I simply identified people who seemed to meet my ideal client profile. Now, how did I do that? Okay, you're sitting on a committee, you're at a charitable board, or it could be anywhere. You could be at a backyard barbecue in your neighborhood, or you could be just at a PTA meeting for your kids, and you're chatting with someone or meeting with someone. As long as you have your ideal client profile firmly in your head, you'll meet people that all of a sudden your radar does go up a little bit, like maybe this person meets my ideal client profile. You don't ask them. I don't talk business unless they ask me about my business. But if I meet somebody and they say, oh, hey, Mark, this is Tom Jones or Ted and Lynn Smith, and they own XYZ widget company here in town. They've been in business for 30 years and it's, you know, they employ 600 people. I mean, I just kind of figure that might be someone who meets my ideal client profile. So developing relationships, and you know, so I never pushed business. I never used sales tactics, but I did have my radar up to identify people that I felt might meet my ideal client profile. So all my objectives were to build my reputation and this marketing 101. Marketing 101, when I say that, all I mean is this. I realized when I started out that most of my potential ideal clients in my community did not know my name and did not know what I do. In other words, I'm not known. And so think of it this way. If you wanted to go out and purchase a list, let's say you have an ideal client profile, you know, my ideal client profile was it had to be a multimillionaire who's a financial delegator, who's passionate about their goals, who loves simplicity. I've shared with you my ideal client profile on past sessions. So I've got this ideal client profile. Well, so do you, you should too, okay? And my point is that if you, with your ideal client profile, went out and attempted to purchase a list of everyone within, let's say, a 50-mile radius of your office who meets that ideal client profile, that list actually does not exist. Your list is so customized, and you could buy lists of affluent people. You can. I'm not saying you can't buy lists of wealthy people. I'm saying you cannot purchase a list of people who specifically meet every aspect and trait of your ideal client profile. So what did I do? I launched something called the Marketing 101 Make-A-List Project. I went out building my reputation as I just described. But in addition to that, with people that I did develop relationships with, let's call them friends. Let's leave business out of it. As I developed relationships and friendships on these boards and committees and everything, later in the relationship, after I got to know them pretty well, I would say, hey, would you be willing to help me out? I'm doing something called a Marketing 101 Make-A-List Project. Would you be willing to help me with that? They go, well, what is it? They say, well, and I would say, let me take you out to coffee next week sometime, and I'll kind of go over it with you. And I'd take them out to coffee, and we'd talk about the committee or whatever else we're focused on, how we know each other. But at the end of the conversation, I would always reserve 10 minutes to go through the Marketing 101 Make-A-List Project. I'd say, you know, I mentioned that I'm doing this project, and I wanted to see if you might be willing to help me. I realized that I've got a very specific ideal client profile, and there is absolutely no way I can generate a list of people who meet this profile. Here's my ideal client profile, and I would show it to them. And I would say, all I'm asking for help with is, can you think of anybody who might meet this profile? I'm not asking you to introduce me. I'm not asking for referrals. I'm not asking for anything other than, would you help me build this list? And that's all I did. And so then that, if they said yes, then that earned me the right to, every time I interacted with them one-on-one, not in groups, but in the future, every time I interacted with them one-on-one, I wasn't annoying about it. I didn't make it the entire conversation. But what I did was I always reserved 5 or 10 minutes at the end of our other conversations when we met one-on-one to say, oh, by the way, have you thought about the Marketing 101 Make a List project? Is there anybody else you think I should add to my list? And then it was a bit of a process, and we don't have time to go through it here. But as the conversation progressed over time, the second or third or fourth time this subject came up, let's say a person added 3 or 4 or 5 names to my list. Then in subsequent meetings, I would say, so how well do you know these 3 or 4 or 5 people that you've added to my list? And some of them they know well, and some of them they don't know at all. I remember one guy just gave me the name of the local owner of the sports team. And when I said, do you know him? And they said, no, but I'm sure he meets your profile. So they might give you anonymous leads, which is fine. But in some cases, they'd say, no, it's a lifelong friend of mine, that person that I gave you. I know for a fact they meet your profile just because they're friends of mine. I'm like, oh, okay. And then later, before I would ask them for a referral or anything, I would just at some point, not right then, but later on, again, this is a relationship developing, and I'm definitely not making the whole relationship about this. That's my whole point. I'm just a nice person. I'm not focusing on business. I'm actually adding value in other ways on the committee, in the charitable board, or with this individual personally. Like if I can help somebody out, I will through my network. I'll point them in the direction of something that they need. And so I'm trying to add value. That's how you build your reputation. But if they agreed to help me with my Marketing 101 Make-A-List project, I always would reserve 5 or 10 minutes at the end to say, so you said you know these 3 people on that you added to my list pretty well. Can you tell me, like, if I wanted to get on their radar screen, what would you recommend? And they'd tell me whatever they think I could be doing to get on their radar screen. And guess what? That's a new pond that I'm not fishing in that I can go investigate to see if I want to get involved with where these people are apparently involved. So listen, what I'm describing is a huge project. It's in our other program, the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, but I got a slew of questions about this Marketing 101 project, and I just wanted to go through it in a little bit more detail just so that you can understand, in essence, what it is and what I did to acquire all those clients. So basically, the strategy that works is focus exclusively on this statistic. As I sat down, and this is the lead conversion piece, this is where Bill Bachrach came in, all right? So after a long period of time, I figured this out, that for every 7.8 initial client interviews, I acquired 1 ideal client. So remember I said you have to master lead generation, lead conversion, and then serving clients and exceeding their expectations, those 3 things? Well, this is lead conversion. I figured out that after I met a bunch of people and all these committees and boards and everything, that for everybody that I actually decided might meet my ideal client profile and then put the motion on the table with them, why don't we sit down and talk business? I think it would benefit you, and just put the offer on the table. For every 7.8 of those meetings where they said, sure, let's sit down and talk business, for every 7.8 of those meetings, I acquired 1 ideal client. So I focused entirely on that. So it became a process where as I'm out there in the community and my radar goes up and I'm identifying people that might meet my ideal client profile, then I became really good at putting the offer on the table. Hey, let's sit down and talk business. Listen, I never brought up business unless they did. But I think what you need to realize and how I removed being salesy from the process is if you're out there doing what I'm describing, if you're a giver, not a taker, if you're out there in the community adding value, building your reputation, if you're that person that everyone pretty much knows, likes, and trusts, then at some point when you get them one-on-one, if you really do sit down with them twice and have coffee and ask them about them, which is all I ever did, listen, human nature is, it's called reciprocity. Human nature is that at some point most normal people will reciprocate at some point in the conversation when you're one-on-one and say, hey, Mark, so what do you do for a living? In other words, enough about me. Let's talk about you just for a second, even though people love to talk about themselves. And I learned that early on. I don't have to bring up business. They will. Or if they don't, they're not normal. I probably don't want to do business with them anyway. They're narcissistic, self-focused, self-obsessed people. And I don't want clients like that. So if I take them out one-on-one and it's all about them and they just talk about themselves and they never reciprocate by saying, so Mark, what do you do for a living? I don't worry about it. I just figure that's 20 minutes out of my life. I'm not going to worry about it. I go on to the next person, and then I sit down and I ask them about their what's important to them in their life, you know, like why do you serve on this board or whatever we're having coffee about. And then most normal people will say at some point, Mark, so what do you do for a living? And then that's now I'm on stage. Now I say, here's what I do. As long as it's clear and compelling and concise, it's, you know, it's not an elevator pitch that's designed to sell them. It's just a simple, clear response of here's what I do. But it's got to be mildly intriguing. So if they're interested at all, it will spur a few follow-up questions. Anyway, so I was focused on this single statistic. I knew that for every 7.8 people that I scheduled an initial client interview with, even though I wasn't 100% sure they meet my ideal client profile. Over time, if you're fishing in the right ponds and your radar gets to be pretty good, the people that you do offer to sit down and talk business with, you get better at this over time. That's my point. And so So look, you can borrow my statistic. If you don't know whether how many initial client interviews convert into an actual ideal client for you, then use my number. As a matter of fact, I've worked with Bill Bachrach so closely since 2002. I'm on his faculty, and I'm privy to his statistics. And I can tell you that on average, this number bears out. It's actually 10. So just figure for every 10 initial client interviews that you schedule, figure one will become an ideal client. So now your goal is just how long does it take you to schedule 10 initial client interviews? That's the whole game. Get out there. Are you talking to enough people? So I focused on people I met who happened to also meet my ideal client, but I was always of service to them. So just be a nice person. I never initiated conversation about the initial client interview, but I asked who they knew who might meet my ideal client profile. I'm building a list. That's the Marketing 101 Make a List project. Now they, you know my ideal client profile. And if at some point, you know, an initial client interview makes sense, it'll become obvious to both of us as the relationship develops. So, and I made sure that I was fishing in the right ponds. I focused attention on people who had money events in their lives. One thing I learned early on is that people are more focused on wanting to sit down and have a meeting with a financial advisor if they've got something front burner in their life, like they've received a retirement offer at work, or they are about to make an offer to purchase a business, or they, you know, they might be in line to receive an inheritance. Somebody's died in their family, or on the negative side, if they're going through a divorce or they're being sued or whatever, these are all money events. These are all things that in their mind, they think, you know, maybe I really do need to sit down and talk to a financial advisor. So anyway, I focused on everything that I described to you. Plus, I kept my radar up. If anybody talked about money events that they were going through, or anybody that we knew on the committee or group or that whatever I was involved with, that they, if they knew of anybody in our group that was going through some sort of a money event, I kept my radar up about that as well. So my results and numbers were that I conducted 648 initial client interviews in 34 months. My goal was to have 5 a week. Okay, so that was my goal in the moment. So I didn't know how many I could actually schedule. All I knew was I was trying to, if possible, my goal was to have one initial client interview per day, Monday through Friday. pretty simple goal. And what actually happened was I, in just going through this very simple process that I described, getting out of the office 3 days a week, I acquired 83 ideal clients in 34 months. And that averaged, just looking back on it, had no control over this, but it ended up being that I acquired 2.44 ideal clients per month. And that's the record breaker. So at my national, I was at a nationwide broker dealer firm at the time. They were ultimately absorbed into LPL. And then I just went out on my own with my own registered investment advisory firm. But at the time, I was at that nationwide firm and I broke the record, all advisors at our firm, broker dealer firm nationwide. And with Bill Bachrach. I mean, Bill Bachrach's been working with the creme de la creme, you know, some of the best top financial advisors in the world ever since I met him in 1999. And no financial advisor he's worked with has ever beat this record of mine. So there must be something about it that works. And so I get the fact that you're curious about it, even though now after we're done, we will focus back on client service. But I did mention last month, and we got some people commenting on this, I think you have an opportunity right now if you're interested in my client acquisition process and the details of exactly what I did step by step, because I am in the process of creating a module, a course, going step by step through everything I just described. I'm mapping out my process. And so I've created a blog post called How I Acquired 1,242 Clients, new course coming soon. And if you'll go to the markofmastery.com, so this is a website you may have never heard of. It's a site that I put up for advisors that are just kind of curious about what we do and the methodologies that we, believe it or not, these things that we believe in the Advisor Pact program are just foreign to many financial advisors in the financial services industry. So there's a lot of curiosity around these methods and strategies that we discuss in the Advisor Pact program. So I created this site called themarkofmastery.com, and you can go there. It's mainly for advisors that are just kicking the tires and they just want to know more about the methodology. I'm not selling anything there. It's just literally bringing people up to speed so to see if they're maybe on the same page with this methodology that we recommend. But up at the top, see where it says blog? Click on blog, and in the blog post, you'll see this one post called How I Acquired 1,242 Clients, New Course Coming Soon. The reason you have an opportunity is that if there is something that is confounding you with client acquisition, if there's an obstacle that's in your way, if there's something, just stop and think about it for a minute. Why aren't you acquiring more ideal clients faster than you are right now? Why is that? So I'm just asking you to ponder that question. And if you read this post, all it says is, whatever you come up with, whether it's an obstacle in your way or just maybe you just wish somebody had trained you in some aspect of client acquisition that nobody ever trained you in before. And there's something that if you could master some element of this client acquisition dilemma, that you could add clients faster. Well, all this post does is say, it says, I'm creating this course. And if there's something that's an obstacle for you, or if there's something you wish that there was a information about, what would it be? So just put your comment at the bottom of this post. I'll put a link to this post in the replay page for this session. So if you're not watching live, if you're actually watching a replay, just look down below the video player. I will put a link to this post. And just go to the bottom and just put the one thing you think a course like this has to cover. Because my fear at this point is that after all these years, I've kind of forgotten some of the basic elements that were really frustrating to me as a young advisor. I think I'm really fearful that there might be some things that now, because I've mastered all this, that I just don't appreciate as being an obstacle as much as I did back then. So if you could help me, it's an opportunity for you as well. I promise if you'll go to this post and add things that you think need to be in a course like this, I will make sure that they're in there. And then, of course, once the course is available, it'll be on this. It'll be in this program, the Advisor Pack Monthly program. I'll make sure of that. So that's the opportunity. And thanks for all the questions this month. I know there's curiosity about client acquisition, but in essence, we're going to get back to focusing on client service, which is what the focus of this program actually is. All right, so let's go to the. Let me go through some of the questions that came in this month that I think are helpful, maybe to everyone. Question came in: should I give a potential client my complete list of services? Is it smart to provide a list of all my deliverables checkpoints to a potential client? The answer is no. I usually, when I'm talking to a potential client, so again, this is lead conversion, so it's not exactly client service, but it's on the bubble. It's just, you know, of the things that we have you doing in this course, in the Advisor Pack Monthly program, how much of that do we share with clients? I mean, it is a natural question. So you're putting together all these deliverables and things that are resulting from these monthly projects that we're sending you in the Advisor Pack Monthly program. What this financial advisor is asking, in essence, how much of all that do we share with potential clients? Because it can get quite involved. So I usually just give potential clients only three graphics, and I only show those graphics in support of answers to their questions. So it's not like I have three graphics that I've got queued up and I show to every potential client. No, it never worked that way. I wait for them to ask a question. So at some point, if they meet my ideal client profile, I will say, you know, do you want to hire me to put together this strategy for you? And then they'll have a question, like maybe what does this cost or what do you charge? Or they might say, so how do you, what do you, what? So let's say I were to sign up with you, what exactly happens next? What are the first few steps? So there are a series of questions that are likely to follow. And all I'm saying is I wait for them to ask a question. And then in support of my answer to whatever their question is, if one of these three graphics is appropriate, I'll pull it out. Otherwise, I don't pull anything out. I just keep it as a nice, friendly conversation. No sales tactics, no closing techniques. It's not a presentation. It's a conversation. I'm looking for fit. I'm looking for someone who meets my ideal client profile, and I'm only inviting people who meet my client profile to join me and work with me in our community of clients. Okay. So what are the three graphics? The three graphics that I might show a potential client are for sure the ideal client profile. Matter of fact, every client and potential client really should see this at some point. Not at the point that you're offering them to join your ideal client community necessarily, but if the subject comes up, like let's say they say something that leads you to believe that they might not meet your ideal client profile, then I would pull out the ideal client profile and I would say, you know, we only accept clients that meet, that we know that we can serve the best. And so we have created a profile of those clients. Let's kind of go through the profile of the client that we serve best and just make sure that we're on the same page. Make sure that everything's in alignment. Make sure that you are the type of potential client that meets all these elements. And then I would pull out the ideal client profile and the 10 client deliverables. So I'm going to go through the modules in this program in a minute, but we have two courses, two modules about how to put together the 10 client deliverables. I'll go through that in a little more detail in a minute. But basically, these 10 client deliverables are the definition of truly comprehensive financial services. In other words, if you when you have delivered each of these 10 deliverables to an existing client in a 12-month period, that's the definition in our world of truly comprehensive financial services. So the problem in our industry is there's no actual definition for comprehensive financial services. We've defined it. It's the 10 client deliverables. So no, I don't give clients all of our deliverables checkpoints, of which in our case, there's 142 deliverables checkpoints. I don't show them that. That's going to be a formula for disaster. It'll start all these conversations on unimportant issues with the potential client. But I will show them the 10 client deliverables, but only if they ask. And then I'll show them our team structure. Now, you'll have to create this, but it's easy to create. I created this in PowerPoint. In essence, you've seen it before in our sessions. It's kind of before and after. So the traditional model is clients have all these financial people in their life, and it's up to the client to coordinate all these people and make sure they're talking to each other if they need to talk to each other. I mean, that's a big responsibility, and most clients just don't do it. It's like they've got all these people, but you know, they're just meeting with them ad hoc, and there's no coordination, there's no overarching strategy, there's no peer review, there's no attempt to make sure that any of their recommendations are perfectly aligned with the overarching strategy, mainly because there's usually never an overarching strategy. So that's the before, and then the after is, you know, the way we are structured. So this is what we describe as our oversight team. So the difference between the traditional financial services model and our model is insert me as your most trusted advisor. I'll ensure two things. I'll make sure that there's an overarching strategy, and I'll make sure that there is peer review. I'll make sure that every recommendation that's given to you by your financial people, your accountant, your estate planning lawyer, your insurance agents, and so forth, I'll make sure our oversight team receives those recommendations from your people before you do. And we will make sure that before anything, any recommendation is seen by you, that everything's perfectly aligned with the overarching strategy. Why? Because it's going to be this team that works with you to create your overarching strategy that's driven by your goals and objectives. So that's the difference. That's the graphic you'll have to create. But the three graphics are ideal client profile. You'll create that. If you have any questions about creating that, let me know. We'll go over it on one of these sessions. 10 client deliverables. I've provided a sample of that several times. I will also put it in the replay page for today's session. And then that our team structure, which is what we just went through. So the only thing I give to potential clients are just 3 one-pagers, and only if they ask a question. But I never give potential clients a complete list of deliverables checkpoints, which is your question. That's overwhelming to a potential client, and it begins a long and unuseful and distracting conversation. Believe me. How do I know? Because I tried it in the early days. I did it myself. I'd show a potential client, because they asked, I'd show them the 142 deliverables checkpoints, and it always went bad. Either they'd go through it and say, well, either they'd be overwhelmed and say, well, I'll have to look at this and I'll take it with me and I'll get back with you. Or they'd start going through it and say, well, I don't think I need all this. And, you know, this one and that one I don't need. So give me a discount. And it was an unuseful conversation. No, a one pager with the 10 client deliverables is ample and sufficient. And the sample that I'm giving you is an internal document. So the sample that I've always provided is actually a listing of the 10 client deliverables in the way that you should present them to your internal team, your subject matter experts. You'll have to create something off these 10 client deliverables that's a client-facing piece. But listing those 10 client deliverables is ample and sufficient, because basically it just covers the 5 major areas of personal finance, and it makes the point that you're comprehensive. In other words, you are responsible for financial planning, having a tax plan, having an estate plan, having a money management or asset management plan, and having an insurance or safety plan, a plan for increasing safety in the strategy. So So that's comprehensive. It's obvious when you show the 10 client deliverables, and it allows you to always having just a one pager that's client, a client piece that just lists the 10 client deliverables. It allows you to then redirect the conversation back to where it needs to go. In other words, all they need to know is enough information to make a decision. So what's the conversation that you need to redirect every potential client back to eventually? It's the conversation about your advisor pact, your advisor pledge, your pledge to fill the current gaps in their financial life. So you always want any of these three pieces to lead back to that conversation. And, you know, once you've verified these gaps, which is true with 99% of the affluent people I've ever met, it's to make the point that, hey, there's no overarching plan without you, or and there's no oversight or measurement of forward progress without you. And even knowing whether they're on or off track doesn't typically happen with most clients, but they would with you. They would always know at all times whether they're on track or off track. And if they're off track, your pledge is to make sure that you provide the recommendations to get them back on track. And without you, there's nobody stepping up to offer to protect their financial strategy or to protect their financial assets. And without you, there's nobody offering to pay attention and pledge to notice when things drift off track. And without you, there's nobody stepping up to coordinate all the financial products and all the financial people in their life. And without you, there's nobody stepping up to ensure that there's a total fee transparency, no hidden fees. In short, the 10 client deliverables allows you to return to the important conversation on the table. What's it worth to you to fill all the financial gaps in your life and make sure you're on track with your values and your goals? So that's why these are the only three graphics that I ever share. Now let's tie these a little bit to the modules. So here are the first, look, these are the first modules that you'll see. I think this is the first 15. So I'm assuming, and let me tell you, after these 15, you keep getting modules, but it's think of this as a bachelor's degree. So the first time you go through these 15 modules, let's say you implement at a certain level, let's call it a bachelor's degree. I mean, back in college, when I was in college, your freshman year, you took a bunch of survey courses, like, you know, survey of history and survey, you know, all the basics of all these major areas of academic discipline. That's all these are, is the survey courses. There is enough detail there to go advanced, but most advisors don't. You know, they go through the first pass of these 15 modules and they're lucky to get any part of it implemented. And then when you go back through in subsequent after these 15, you really just go back through these same 15, but now you do it at a master's level. And then you go back through the 15 again after that at a PhD level. You'll spend the rest of your career implementing these 15 modules, but at a higher and higher level of skill. And that's what exceeds clients' expectations. It's your ability to take these 15 concepts and always continually take them to the next level. So the point I'm getting at is you've got these two modules. You may or may not. So if you're looking at these 15 and you're thinking, hey, I don't see all these 15 modules, it's because we give you modules in sequence and you just may not have gotten this far yet. But at some point, if you have not gotten these modules called the deliverables team recruitment process and evaluating your deliverables team, these are the two modules that are key to our process, because this is the procedure where you will fill every vacancy on your team of subject matter experts. So these are the modules where you make sure that you're adding a new subject matter expert every 60 days until you have all five. And eventually you need all five, and they should be five other than you. A financial planning subject matter expert, tax, estate planning, money management, and insurance. So these are the five. And then evaluating your team. So what do they do once they're on board? Well, the question on the table, if you've brought a truly skilled, talented subject matter expert onto your team, it's to ask them, would exceed the expectations in your narrow field of finance of somebody that meets my ideal client profile. And this is the step where they create your deliverables checkpoints. So I mentioned that I've got 142 deliverables checkpoints. We share those on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. That's our flagship program. That's the only place that those are visible and available to our clients. We share the 142 deliverables checkpoints in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. But in this program, this is not the toolkit. What you're paying for in this program is to build the toolkit yourself. I mean, this program's for people that aren't ready for the toolkit or don't want the toolkit. And so my pledge to you in this program is to take you through every step of the process that I went through when I built the toolkit. And that's what you're doing. So in these two modules, you're working with your subject matter experts just like I did to establish what are all the deliverables checkpoints that are required for a client to genuinely be able to say that at the end of each and every year that you've delivered on your promise to deliver the 10 client deliverables. So what are all the checkpoints, the checklist items underneath each of the 10 client deliverables in order to make sure that the 10 client deliverables get done every year? So that's these two modules. And then these two modules are the 10 client deliverables. So we spend it's part one and part two. We go through, you know, each of the 10 client deliverables to make sure now that you have your team in place, make sure that they are covering all the 10 client deliverables. And so these two modules help you work with your team now that you've got all five in place, you know, to make sure that you're covering all the bases and all these 10 client deliverables are actually getting done. And then this module, which if you haven't received it, if you're not this far yet, you will eventually see. It's called the first 104 days of a new client relationship. It's really the first, in essence, quarter, the first 90 days. It's, if you think about it, and if you're familiar with the three meeting process, then you meet with a client, it's the initial client interview, then if they meet your profile and you decide to work together, if you invite them into your client community and they say yes, then we recommend the next meeting is the implementation meeting. That's 14 days later. And that's basically just to make sure you've gathered all the documents, financial documents that you need to create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. And then after that implementation meeting, now you've got every document that they need. You know, most clients bring in all their documents at the first meeting, but invariably there's a few that are missing. And so that's the implementation meeting to get what's missing. But then the race is on. 45 days after the implementation meeting, you have something called the initial progress update meeting. That's to show your first pass of completing the financial plan, the overarching strategy. And then 45 days after that, you've completed the comprehensive lifetime plan. And so that's 104 days, and it's just a little over a quarter of a year to get that done. And this is where creating a really tight documented process to make sure that this actually does get done in the first 104 days of every new client relationship. Well, that's important. That getting the relationship off to the right footing is critical. And, you know, then after this 104 days, then you kind of release the client into the routine three meeting process, and then you cycle through the 10 client deliverables after that. But this module is really important that you master this. And keep in mind, this is after you've built your team of five subject matter experts. This is after you've mastered the 10 client deliverables. So you've got all the infrastructure in place. You've got the people and the team. You've got the deliverables. Everything's in place. Now you're just kind of refining that client onboarding process where in roughly a quarter of a year, your team of five subject matter experts is capable of working together to actually create this thing that no client has typically before you come along, and that is a true comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. And so that's the first 104 days. So that's where all this happens in answer to your question. Next question. I have one subject matter expert and we want to increase client referrals, but my subject matter expert does not feel unsolicited client referrals are controllable. My subject matter expert does not feel unsolicited client referrals are controllable. She thinks they occur. They're nice, but you can't really rely on them. And so that's going to be the closing for today. We're over time. It kind of refers to an issue that we talk about a lot. There are two kinds of client referrals, and we're trying to increase both. Solicited client referrals, that's what a lot of programs out there deal with. This is really an advisor skill. This is a skill where you as a financial advisor become increase your communication skills to be able to have an effective referral conversation with clients. Okay, so this is on you. This is your skill. But then what this particular subject matter expert does not believe is possible is or drive or control is this thing that we know as unsolicited client referrals. So what is this? Well, as we talk about all the time in this program, this program that you're in and all of our programs, we are the only firm that trains advisors on how to control and drive unsolicited client referrals, which are far more valuable. This is, in essence, being so remarkable, delivering such value to your clients that a number of them, enough of them, actually are impressed enough that they go out into the community and talk you up. You know, the experience is so extraordinary, they can't help but go out and tell people in their lives about you and things that you've done for them. And so then as a result, all of a sudden your phone rings and it's somebody that you were not expecting. And they say, yeah, so-and-so said, I'd be crazy if I don't call you and talk about my financial situation. And this is an unsolicited client referral. So this subject matter expert thinks you cannot drive these. And I'm gonna end on a video from the toolkit, which kind of walks through. First of all, that's not true. You can. Our whole program validates that you can control unsolicited client referrals. That I would go so far as to say that's what our entire program is all about, is creating such an extraordinary experience and exceeding your client's expectations to the point where that's all we focus on is increasing and controlling unsolicited client referrals. So what drives that? Well, I've got a video that I have over on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit that walks through the six strategies, six elements in the toolkit that drives client referrals, both solicited and unsolicited. And trust me, all client referrals are good. I don't technically care whether they come in as solicited client referrals or unsolicited client referrals. But think what a machine you've got if you've got an army of clients out there sharing the good news about you and your services with everyone that they know and love and care about. So that's really the goal of this program, and we're the only program that teaches anything about unsolicited client referrals. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hop over to the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, and where I've got this page for toolkit members called Better Understanding the Basic Toolkit Strategies, How to Drive and Control Client Referrals. And specifically, this is how we get you on top of this driving of unsolicited client referrals, which you can control. But I'm going to show you this video, and this will be the last thing that we do. It's a 3-minute video. But in essence, it sums up what you're learning in this program. So all that you're going to see in this video is the result or the outcome of implementing all the modules in this course that you're in, the Advisor Pack Monthly program. So let's go through this. And with that, I will end at the end of this video. We'll just end our session for this month. And I just can't encourage you enough. If you need help as you're implementing, you've got unlimited support from us. So we know you're implementing when you ask questions, so ask questions. Anytime you get stuck or need direction, just click the Contact Us link in this program, and we'll get back with you. But in the meantime, without further ado, it says the toolkit, but how does the Advisor Pack monthly program work to increase referrals?
Thank you.